Good morning. Welcome back. Wednesday.
Hump day.
The day before Thanksgiving, the big day. This is the I Am Sorry About Last Night podcast. I am Tom, alcoholic, part of the Social Podcast Network, www.socialpodcastnetwork.com. Check out all of our podcasts from local podcasters, podcasting. What's going on? So it is the day before Thanksgiving. Oh, man. Exhale, everybody. Exhale. This day. This is, and I've been sober a while, but this is the day. If it wasn't for like this day, Christmas Day, my birthday, Cinco de Mayo, I mean, basically every holiday. But it seemed like more shit went down on this day than any other day. I don't know why. Always big drinking day. Always big fight day. Always was saying sorry about last night the next day. Same with Christmas Eve. Oh, my God, those days. Sure, I went out with my cousin on Christmas Eve, back in the day, went out to some bar, but got all trashed, like almost started a fight, thought I was a badass, fucking freaked out my cousin. My cousin and I still don't speak to this day because of it. I mean, I think we would speak, but she's like, I don't like this guy. And I don't blame her. And I've felt like reaching out and making an amends. I think I've made the amends. I know I made an amends, but she don't want anything to do with me. I'm like, damn. I think there's other things to that. For some reason, it's weird, you know, being adopted. My dad's, you know, growing up, we lived in Albuquerque. My mom's side of the family all lived basically in Oklahoma City. My grandmother and grandfather, her mother and father lived, I think, in Iowa, Arkansas at some point. And then my dad's side of the family lived here in Delaware on the East Coast. My mom's side of the family, oh, my God, lovey-dovey, big, you know, big Thanksgivings, you know, the more the merrier, tons of food, hugs, you know, reminiscing. My dad's side of the family, not so much. Very cold people. They don't give a fuck about anything. They don't. And maybe there's some, you know, maybe something good to that, right? Maybe there's something positive. They do not give two shits. I think that I've always felt like they had a resentment towards my brother and I because we were adopted. Like we weren't really part of the family. And then the fact that we struggled a bit through our teenage years and, you know, being young adults. And of course, my uncle, he's got an opinion about everything. He thinks he's right about everything, right? So I'm sure they had some resentment because we were struggling and, you know, I think back then we were like orphans. Those kids you took in aren't working out. Never, ever been close to my family on the East Coast. And they don't even invite, we're not invited for Thanksgiving. My dad is. My wife and I are not. Nobody in my family is invited to my uncle's for Thanksgiving. And the worst part about it is they're the most fucking annoying people I ever meet. Absolutely annoying. All of them. But they're who they are. And it may just be me that's annoying. But there's definitely some issues. And nothing that needs to be fixed. As far as I'm concerned, they're really, you know, when my mom passed away and, you know, I didn't get a condolence from any of them, None of them called me to say, you know, sorry about your mother. I was like, you know what? I'm done with these people. I mean, this sounds like some serious program shit I got to work out, right? I need to really clean this shit up. But I don't want to. I have a resentment about it, and I'm okay with it. It doesn't actually bug me that much. It kind of... My uncle actually started coming to me to cut his hair, and him and I started kind of having a cool relationship. And my uncle is, you know, he's fine. You know, they're all fine. But, you know, there's this, you know, and I see it with my wife's family. I've always, and that was one thing my mom was very great about. It was always trying to bring family together. She loved having family together. And now that she's gone, there's no one really to try to pull us together. And, you know, my dad, I shared this the other day. My dad got mad at me because I lied to him about who I voted for. And he said, lie to me again and you're out of the family. And I'm like, what family? You're the only one left. We're the family. We're, you know, we've never questioned whether you're in or out of the family. We've always considered him part of the family. But he's, you know... He's not the one to be throwing people out of the family. Because it's very important to me. Family is very important. It's very important. I love my kids to have, you know, security. I don't know. It's weird. Is there security knowing you have family? I guess there is, right? I don't think my kids think, oh, if something goes bad, I have people to rely on, but... I think when you have a big family and you, or when you have a close family, and I think when you have people, a lot of family members that get along, I think that that shows that there's a lot of give and take in that relationship. See, there's not a lot of give and take in the relationship with my dad's side, because they are the way they are. They give nothing. They do not care. It's like, if you're not going to be nice to us, Uncle Mike, we're not going to come over. Don't come over. I don't care. Oh. They really just don't care. My uncle and my aunt would prefer, they would love to sit in their house all day and see nothing and do nothing. You know, COVID's got them freaked out. But my uncle started coming to me for me to cut his hair, and we were actually having a pretty good relationship. And like I said, if he was pulled over or broken down or something, of course I would stop for him. But it really made me mad when nobody gave us condolences about my mom. It made me feel like we weren't really her kids. Is that weird? Because we really weren't. We were adopted. And I've never felt more adopted. I've never felt more in that role of being the adopted kid than I did with my relationship with my dad's side of the family. Like, they always just thought we weren't like, or I always felt like they thought we weren't good enough. Didn't do a good enough job because we struggled. Very strange. This is a weird time of the year, the holidays, because especially... with our family, because a lot of this, the past, and it's been a while. Like I said, in December, less than a month. What's today? Yep. In less than a month, I can announce this. In December 22nd, I'll celebrate 12 years. Now, that's a long time to have not gotten wrapped up in with my uncle and aunt and cousin. You know, there was a time I wanted to reach out to my cousin and say, listen, I don't know why we're still not really friends, but I'd like to change that. But then I thought, do you? Or do you just want to fix a relationship that isn't quite looking perfect in my eyes? Like, how dare her not like me? I've got to fix this. I must let her know how great I am so she will come to and change her ways. Because honestly, I could care less if she liked me. She is, you know, that side of the family is always about money. You got to make a lot of money. Making money.
Your cousin, she makes a lot of money.
I fucking could care less. She's short. You know, like I have to start picking her apart because she makes money. I don't care that she makes money. She's too short. Where I'm just like, you know, jealous. I hate my cousin.
Why do you hate your cousin?
I don't know. Maybe because she just has put a lot of effort into her life and done so well, and I haven't. Maybe because I was an asshole in front of her, and she called me out on it and hasn't forgiven me. She hasn't forgiven me. I was an asshole in front of her. My fault. And I would still prefer to blame my cousin and take that quickest, that escape route, which is, I just don't like my cousin. I haven't earned my cousin's trust. I don't know if it's trust is the right word. I haven't tried. She hasn't tried. And I think we're fine with it. But I haven't thought about any of this until Thanksgiving shows up. And the thing that was annoying is that, you know, my dad, you know, my mom's been ill. We've been, you know, having my dad over 3 days a week. He's coming over tonight, 3 or 4 days a week for dinner. I'm going to your uncle's for Thanksgiving. Well, there you go.
Crazy.
The funny thing about it is that it's a, you know, I'm celebrating 12 years and I'm still fucking insane with this shit.
I'm still insane with this shit. I remember thinking.
I'll go on forever, only knowing I'll see you again. And I know the touch of you is hard to remember, but like that touch I've known no other. I'm for sure we have danced in the risk of each other. Would you like to dance around the world with me? I'll be falling all about my own thing, and I know you're the heaviest weight. When you're not here, that's hung around my head, and your lips burn wide from the face of a child, and in your eyes the scene of the greatest view. Do what you will, always walk where you like your steps. Do as you please, I'll back you up.
I think the holidays always jar a lot of memories for me. And the other thing that the holidays do is they expose one of the main problems, one of the main character defects that I struggle with more now, honestly, being sober than I ever did before, which is financial insecurity.
Oh, money.
Wow. My financial insecurity life is like a roller coaster. My insecurity was, can I get enough money for some weed? You know, when the word allowance and the word weed or the word allowance and the word beer come into play, you know you're either getting allowance way too long or you're getting into these things way too early. And I think it was probably a little bit of both. Because I could probably take my allowance and get some beer and some weed back in the day. But I wasn't worried about it. I could care less back then. I don't know how many people out there used to pawn their shit, but fuck, we pawned everything. And it was the pawn game. Where's your amplifier? It's in a pawn shop for $5 so I could get a nickel of Mexican weed, some dirt weed. I don't know how many times my dad had to take a trip to the pawn shop. I know one of the last things he ever had to do was take a trip to the pawn shop when my brother sold his banjo in Albuquerque. The guy told him, I knew one day somebody would come looking for this. That's how we were. We fucking did not care. Self-centered bastards. God damn, I look back. And every day that I live in my life with my kids and my family and this life that I'm living is every day I realize what a fucking piece of shit I was. My kid last night, they were at the boardwalk. He's 15. I don't know. We'll have to keep an eye on him. But down at the boardwalk, you know, having fun with his friends. He comes home at 9 o'clock, sits and chats with us, talks. I'm like, this is normal. Normal stuff. Not me. Nope. Had to get high. Had to use Visine. Had to drink beer. Get drunk. Crazy. But when I first got sober, we admitted we were powerless over alcohol, that our lives had become unmanageable. I think my life had become unmanageable to everybody around us. I told my wife that. She laughed. She goes, absolutely, that was the problem. Our lives had become unmanageable to everybody around us. We were the last one to be bothered by our lives, right? But I remember getting sober, and I was working on the golf course during my addiction, raking bunkers, getting up at fucking 5 in the morning, still drunk, coming to work. I remember hitting the time card, fucking still drunk. And being like, I don't even care. Bringing my paycheck to my father here. All right. He would have to cover the difference, right? And then he would give me some money afterwards. And I remember I'd have some cash and I'd go buy a little bottle of vodka, whatever. Just this fucking existence. What a waste of fucking time. And what a waste of my dad's time, right? No wonder my uncle and them don't like us. Then we got sober, right? Then I got sober. And I remember right away at the end of my first year, I decided to go to turf management school at Rutgers. And off I went. My sponsor's like, I don't know, man. It's awfully... Shouldn't do anything like this in the first year. Like, I'm fine. I need to catch up. And I did okay. But I got my turf management degree, and then I started working. And then I started, and I'll never forget, you know, in my addiction, you know, and good or bad, my dad always fucking helped us out. And I'm always full of great gratitude for that, sort of, because, you know, I don't know. I can't look back and question it, but, you know, I used to bring my paycheck to him, and he'd say, all right. And he'd basically cover the difference. Whatever it had, whatever he had to put in to manage the rest of the month for us. And I just remember, you know, as I started to get better and get sober and try to catch up, and, you know, I remember getting a job, and it was, you know, I think it made... $12 an hour. I don't even know, because 20 years ago, even $12 an hour 20 years ago was, I don't even know, decent, I suppose. But I'd, you know, I'd been making $6 an hour, $6.50 or something like that. So to really, to start making a little bit of money, but then that's when that financial insecurity shows up. And the more money that I made, the more financially insecure I became. And then I was also like, you know, I was trying to make up more of the money every month so that my dad had to contribute less. And I just remember, I remember the day that I didn't need him anymore. I mean, it was a big day. I said, I think I got this. Eh? And then I think I got married. And, you know, of course, you know, two is better than one. And we were able to do it. But always worried about money. When it started to show up. It's the same thing with life. You know, my life was so fucking shitty back in those days. I can give a fuck. I can care. Then your life gets better. And then you're like, wow. You start worrying about things. My life didn't become unmanageable until I put down the drink. Up until then, I didn't have a life. And this, you know, at 12 years almost sober, I'm still not as much on the financial side. I guess I still am. The solutions that I come up with or have tried to come up with for me for this time of the holidays, really Christmas, is I just try to set a budget. And I'll tell you that our budget, this might be a lot, this might not be shit, I get it, but we try to spend $300 per child. Now we always go over a little. But at least $300 a child gives us something to work with. And I can usually save up, you know, through tips that I claim, of course, and, you know, money earned throughout the year that I can usually save up about. I can usually put about $1,000 away in cash on the side throughout the year without, like, affecting our mortgage or anything. And remember, people, we're poor people. We poor. I mean, there's probably a lot of people say we aren't, but believe me, compared to a lot of people around us, we poor. And we cool. All right. But the setting that, you know, that budget helps prevent a lot of problems. And it prevented a problem this year. And the problem was that I might have discussed this, but my daughter, she was wanting more than the budget allowed. And she's so cute. It's like, oh. And then my wife's like, well, my mom said she'll pay the difference. And I'm like, no. That's not fair. And it wasn't fair. I hate bringing up fairness because I feel like it's petty. But it's important because we have three kids. And we have to be fair. And I said, babe, we have a budget. But my mom's going to cover the difference. I go, that's not the point. The point is we have a budget that keeps everything fair. Turns out we didn't end up. I saw my mother-in-law. She's like, she does not need that thing. And she did. I mean, look, I wish we could give them everything they wanted, but I'm glad we can't. We're still trying to build character, not characters. But the budget allows us to save a certain amount of money. When it's Christmas time comes along, my wife says I need to transfer the money. I get the money and I put it in her account, and boom, we've got all the money paid for the Christmas presents, $1,000. Look, we could spend $2,000. We could probably spend $3,000 if we really wanted to. I mean, that would be like credit cards and shit like that, but $300 is enough for one child. Now, like I said, we probably go over a little bit, and then my dad will give us some money, and my in-laws give us money, and the kids do. They have a great Christmas, but it's important for me and us to set down this budget. It stops the fighting. Because it's nice to have like that safe, what is it, banana? No, pineapple? It's nice to have a safe word, a safe budget, a safe line, a safe place, a safe thought. You know, that when in doubt, say it out. Say the thought. We got a budget. We had decided. You know, we've already committed. Because it'll sometimes save like a big argument. We can argue, but we set a budget, babe. Because I can spend way too much money trying to buy my kids love. Can't buy me love. Buying kids love. You know, I see people that spend, I mean, a fucking outrageous amount of money, and I just think to myself, what's going on there? I think kids have got to be the biggest challenge I face. Trying to weave my way along the path, creating character and hopefully figuring out a way to allow them to have some success. But it feels so good to give them everything they want. And it feels good in like this weird place, like this weird emotional, you know, my son came home last night from the boardwalk and I'm like, did you eat? Yeah, I had a piece of pizza. I'm like, are you hungry? And he's like, kinda. And right away I'm like, okay, this is my opportunity to be awesome. I'm like, but the problem is we didn't have any food. I mean, we had food, but we didn't have anything because last night was our late night, so we ended up usually buying Chick-fil-A for dinner. So we didn't have any food, leftovers or anything. But I'm like, I gotta make him something. So I found this little piece of steak, which was from the other night, which was a good steak. Sliced it up, whipped him a sandwich together, and I just was looking for this approval from him. Is it good? It's okay. I'll take it. I'll take it. It's okay. We want our kids to love us. We want to be loved. I love my kids. The little ones love me. The big one, daily. But, you know, you can get caught up in the stuff, giving them a lot of stuff and buying their love. One of the challenges that we're going through right now is we want to rebuild our house, and we're going to have to we're tearing it down. And it's nothing like a tear down when you start really digging through some of the fucking garbage you have, right, in your house. And you find all these objects that you used to buy for Christmas to buy their love. Every Christmas Eve, do we get enough? Oh, I hope we got enough. It's like, fuck. Of course we get enough. What is, let's see what Daily Reflection says, and then we'll move on to, living. Hope everyone's having a great day. Do you struggle this time of year? Are you struggling? Reach out. Reach out to somebody. Talk about it. Let's talk about it. Oh, man. Here we go. November the 25th, a powerful tradition. In the years before the publication of the book Alcoholics Anonymous, we had no name. By a narrow majority, the verdict was for naming our book The Way Out. One of our early loan members found exactly 12 books already titled The Way Out. So Alcoholics Anonymous became first choice. That's how we got a name for our book of experience, a name for our movement, and as we are now beginning to see, a tradition of the greatest spiritual import. All right, I'm going to try to read this without fucking it up. Here we go. Beginning with Bill's monumentous... Already fucked it up. Here we go. Beginning with Bill's momentous. Beginning with Bill's momentous decision in Akron to make the telephone call rather than a visit to the hotel bar, how often has a higher power made itself felt at crucial moments in our history? The eventual importance that the principles of anonymity would acquire what but dimly perceived, if at all, in those early days. There seems to have been an element of chance, even in the choice of a name of our fellowship. God is no stranger to anonymity and often appears in human affairs in the guises of luck, chance, or coincidence. If anonymity somewhat fortuitously became the spiritual basis for all of our traditions, perhaps God was acting anonymously on our behalf. Yeah, I don't know what that means. I mean, I kind of do, but I can't. I don't know. The way they wrote things back in the day, I struggle with the cadence of the sentence. So, I did not know that they tried to initially call this program The Way Out. Should be The Way In. You know, the thing that keeps coming to my mind lately is, you know, trying to figure out why, what am I here for? Am I here because I got caught? Am I here because I got no choice? Am I here because I want to be free from drinking? Or am I here because I want to find some serenity? Like four choices. When I first came to the program, I came because I couldn't stop getting caught at it. That's always been an issue. I mean, if it wasn't for getting caught, I probably would still drink. My ex-wife caught me. Everybody caught me. I was terrible at it. I don't know. Listen, I hope everyone has a great day. I'm going a little long. I don't want to do that. So I'm just going to finish the song up. Happy Thanksgiving. I may do a podcast tomorrow. I don't know. We'll see. But happy Thanksgiving. Stay well. Stay sober, everybody. And have a great day. And we'll catch you next time. Bye.
Somehow we keep up with each other. I'll be falling when I'm about to ride over the earth. And I know you're the heaviest weight, yeah. When you're not here, that's all around my head. And your lips burn wild from the face of a child. And in your eyes I've seen all the greatest beauty. Do what you will, always walk away like your steps. Do as you please, I'll back you up.